In this episode, we discuss the dance film Step Up 2, The Streets. Welcome back to the Flophouse. And I say back because we've been gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
How you doing? Stuart's here.
Hey, Stuart Wellington. It's me, Stuart.
Elliot Kalin.
There's a lot of Elliot Kalin in your ear right now.
And me, Dan McCoy. Yeah.
And is this the first Flophouse of 2009 AD?
Yeah, it is. You know, we took 2 weeks off, and I know that you over The Daily Show also took 2 weeks off.
We took 3 weeks off.
And you can get away with that. Being a popular, beloved program.
Yes.
Do you think that we can get away with that?
It's possible our fans have forgotten we exist.
All right.
What's The Daily Show? I've forgotten.
Well, it's hosted by golfer John Daly.
Okay.
And as all of my dad and mom's friends think when they ask me about it. And
sounds good.
Yeah. They're like, how's your golf game these days?
No, they go, how's the John Daly Show?
Gone down to par?
gone down to par.
I'm assuming that you're currently above par.
Far above par.
Yeah. So,
par is a dream.
Yeah.
Like on a mini golf course or
any kind, mini golf, maxi
mini
golf,
isn't that
regular golf?
Okay.
Mario golf.
Sure. Wii golf.
Wii golf.
That's what it's called. Wii golf.
Nintendo Wii golf and also WEE golf, which is smaller than mini golf.
Okay. I didn't know that existed.
Well, it doesn't yet, but I'm patenting it.
Okay.
But we didn't watch a golfing movie.
No, sir.
We watched a much more active pastime, and that's dance.
The world of dance.
The magic of dance.
Absolutely.
We watched American Primitive, the Martha Graham story.
We watched The Catherine Wheel, directed by Twyla Tharp. No,
The Company, directed by Robert Altman.
We watched...
it was just called Company.
Step Up to the Streets. That's Step Up to the digit
the number
two.
Two.
Yeah.
Like it's like they were... It was called Untitled Dance Project, and then... the writer texted the title to one of the producers, assuming they'd know that it wouldn't be the
he
number two
on
in real
his
life.
Sidekick.
Yeah, exactly, on his sidekick. And they were like, oh, okay, Step Up, number two, The Streets.
No, well, I mean, you may think that Prince named the movie, but it's actually a sequel. It's a sequel, as I gather, to the film Step Up.
So wait, this screenplay wasn't like kicking around Hollywood for years.
No, it's
years,
not like the Unforgiven screenplay where it took 20 years to make it.
Well,
it
may have been because...
This is an old Robert Towne screenplay from the beginning of his career. Paul Schrader took a pass on it, but...
As far as I'm able to gather via IMDb, none of the characters from the original Step Up are, reprised in this film. They don't reappear. This
I was
appears
really
to
disappointed
have...
by that.
Yeah, it has the same... maybe it's in this breakdancing tradition with Breakin' and Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo, where there's no carryover.
Maybe it's an
stores.
Homage.
Which, like, Carrie and Carrie 2.
The Rage Carrie 2.
The Rage Carrie 2.
But that's more of, like... The Rage Carrie 2 is more like Evil Dead 2, where they're just like, you know what, let's make a sequel, but let's just remake it.
Yeah, I guess so. But where would you place this movie on the dance meter? 0 meaning no dancing, and 10 meaning too much dancing.
So it's just the amount of dancing we're talking, not the quality of dancing.
So what are you saying?
I'd put this like an 8.5.
Yeah, wait, okay. on your scale, 10 actually exceeds the how much you'd actually want to have.
Yeah, you'd
want
to see like a 9.
Oh, okay.
10 is like a little bit too much. Like 9 is like a big, good dinner, and 10 is like, I ate too much.
It's like you get an A+, thus you're irritating. That's
exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
As opposed to an A-, the coolest of the grades.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm good, but I'm not so good that I can't relate to you still.
Yeah,
or maybe I don't need to try too hard.
Yeah, that's the other one. I'm okay with passing by
in
the top level, but not the top level.
So you think that Step Up to the Streets is an 8 out of a 10 meter on dancing.
Yeah, around there.
So it wasn't irritating. It was almost perfect.
In terms of amount,
just the
of
amount
dance?
Of dancing,
I'm just amount. We're not talking about quality yet.
Yeah, in terms of amount of dancing, that's actually about the number of dances and length of dances I would expect out of a dance film.
Can you compare it to another movie that features, I would imagine, a lot of dancing, so that our listeners can understand, like a Moulin Rouge sort of thing. that Chicago thing.
Yeah, it's kind of Chicago-y. Not as much dancing as Chicago, where there's almost every scene is a dance scene, it feels like.
Okay.
If I'm remembering it correctly.
I'm not.
In amount of dancing, and only in amount of dancing, I would say that this ranks above Singing in the Rain, because Singing in the Rain ends with a huge, long ballet dance that I don't want to see.
It doesn't end with it.
All right.
That's a chunk. You're thinking of An American in Paris.
Yeah, that's right. There's a big chunk in the middle.
Is it like the end of the Takeshi Kitano Zatoichi movie where all of a sudden
that's
everybody
just one
breaks
dance.
Into a dance?
That's just one dance scene.
Okay.
But it's more dancing than Singing in the Rain, but less dancing than Invitation to the Dance, the all-dance movie that Gene Kelly did.
I haven't seen those movies.
Well, you haven't seen Singing in the Rain?
Not that I can remember.
Oh, okay.
What am I missing?
pure fun. But anyway, should we talk about what was in this movie?
Let's please talk about the plot, because Elliot has been informed by friends that we do not clarify the plot enough up top.
People are they think it's too much of a mystery what we're talking about when we talk about, you know, 27 dresses. Oh, I didn't understand what was going on in the movie, what with all the dresses and everything. You didn't cover it well enough.
So who wants to summarize? I'll do it. Okay. So there's this girl who
Name's Andy.
Yeah, and she's part of
it. I never caught that once.
Yeah, her name's Andy.
An hour and 40 minutes.
But her friends call her D.
D.
Okay.
She's only my girlfriend's nickname.
So she's part of a dance crew in inner city Baltimore, and they do all kinds of wacky dance stunts.
The movie opens with them prank dancing on a subway car where member after member of this dance crew takes off their everyday person costume and does annoying dancing that irritates people who are just trying to get home from a hard day at work.
Mainly people just seem surprised. It's not like when people are dancing on the subway when I'm on the subway and I just try and, like, I lift up my book or magazine
to
and try and
you
read
can't
it.
See them.
we're already defeating the purpose of summarizing up
top. we're explaining this scene.
So she's part of this dance crew, right? And apparently they are public enemies number one because of the because of the fucking news has like a story.
Dancing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they
wave
do
of dance crime. So
that never really got picked up again. That dance crime storyline.
Yeah, it's okay. So and her mom's dead.
So this is her mom's best friend.
Yeah, it's
her guardian.
Yeah, it's her guardian, and she's like, if you don't shape up, I'm going to make you move to Texas, which obviously...
Where there's no dancing.
Yeah, there's no dancing at all.
Oh, except for the boot scoot and boogie, and she does not want to do that.
Yeah, she made that pretty clear early on in the film. So one of her friends is like, yo, if I beat you in a dance battle, then you're going to have to go to the Maryland School of Arts. And she's like, F that, dog.
That's what tough dancers are always trying to get people to do. They're like, I'm going to trick you into higher education.
You got served. Matriculate.
Yep, So after a few servings, she goes to she ends up enrolled in the Maryland School of Arts, where, you know, of course, the teachers frown upon her street styles. And then somehow she gets kicked out of her old dance crew. She forms a new dance crew with the nerdy kids at her school, including some of the rich white kids at her school.
Who are all amazing dancers.
Who are all amazing dancers in their own kind of special way. And then when they try to enter the world of underground street dancing, they get frowned upon and they get served pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
And then they end up breaking up because she gets kicked out of school. And then somehow they all come back together for the big final dance off and then win the day. And then there's making out.
And they convince the head of the school, who stops by and watches them dance in the rain before a crowd of thousands, it seems, that she should be let back into the school.
Yeah.
And he originally goes to the dance competition to, like, break it, to put a stop to this.
Yes.
Which, of course, he doesn't. Instead,
it's a dangerous dance competition.
He is maybe the whitest character I've ever seen in a film.
Yeah, he finds a spot in his heart for street dancing. And once again, just in time for all the characters to pretty much start making out in the rain.
Yeah.
Which is just how I like all movies to end.
Well, they're two strands of modern dance movies, and I honestly think that every dance movie made post 1980 is either one or the other plot, and they haven't discovered how to work dancing into other plots. And that's the Footloose plot, where dancing is not allowed, but some rebel just has to dance, and often this rebel has been sent there from some place where there is a lot of dancing.
Sure.
And so they want to continue their dancing ways.
Dancylvania, if you will.
And, you know, this movie starts out, you think it's going to be that one, because there's talk of her being sent to, you know, to Texas.
That's a red herring, though.
And then there's the Flashdance school, where someone uses their street dancing or unconventional dance skills to shake up the stuffy world of dance, mm-hmm. and that's definitely what this film is.
Well, okay.
They what I'm glad about is that they're finally showing that breakdancing can be culturally acceptable dancing too. A mere 20 years after that case had been made to the general public already.
Sure,
right.
What I like is that it shows
it's like a movie where like a rock star proves to a classical music conductor that rock music can be music too. And it's like, oh, okay. I mean, I thought that was established like 35 years ago. But
it's not just that it's also music or also an acceptable art form, but in many ways, it's better.
That's the unspoken assumption that I hate in these movies, where it's like, old culture, boring. This is the new stuff, and therefore, it has evolved into this.
Yeah, well, and you know what? In this sort of like strain of dance film, there's usually that thing where, oh, I can use ballet in my breakdancing,
yeah.
and that will improve it. That's like that's their like sop to that idea that other arts are valid.
Maybe the entirety of human history until this point isn't completely useless.
Yeah.
If it can help me in my breakdancing.
And this film, breakdancing trumps it all.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me a lot of the movie Flatliners, where the
I can't wait to hear this parallel.
where the med students decide to figure out a way to, you know, beat death using their own brand of new science. And how old science is bad, yeah. Kevin Bacon would have been kicked out of school. Kevin Bacon was about to be kicked out of school.
That movie stops being interesting about halfway through, because it's like, we're going to stop our hearts and then start them up again. Like, that's kind of an interesting to see what happens, but the ghosts of the people you wronged in the past come and get you is not really a logical.
Well, but also it's one of those
in a really boring way too.
In a really boring way, yeah.
It's one of those horror movies where the antagonist ultimately is shown to be trying to help. Like, this is my least favorite type of horror movies. Like, oh, I shouldn't have been scared all along.
That's my problem with The Sixth Sense. Is wait a minute. There was no danger ever at any point ever.
That ghost was just trying to show me the giant hoard of treasure under the house.
We're rich.
Yay! Thanks, ghost.
Now I can finally fund my unrealistic business idea.
Time to build a ghost mansion. Like a Beetlejuice or something.
Wait a minute. This ghost just wanted to be famous. Let's invite other people to our ghost house.
Yay! That sounds great.
That's the story of the haunted mansion.
And so that's kind of what I learned about. That's kind of what I learned from watching Step Up to the Streets. Was that new dancing is way better than old fuddy duddy ballet dancing. Ho hum.
Well, now that we've given the.
As the kids would say, ho hum.
Now that we've given the overview, I feel like we can circle back and get into a little more detail. And certainly it's a very strange, as we said, beginning where the guy serves the girl into. The Maryland School of the Arts.
I'm just impressed they're in
it. And he disappears from the film. He pulls his hood on his hoodie back up over his head and walks away like a dance angel.
His work was done.
What I like,
we haven't talked about the main
location of this movie, which is a club called The Streets, which represents the streets. If I was doing the play sets for this film, there would be three of them. There would be Andy's house, where she argues with her mom. Okay. Mom and sister figure come with that set.
Who, by the way, is played by Kima, the actress who played Kima in The Wire, which is funny because this movie takes place in Baltimore.
Sunny Baltimore.
So I like to think that Kima's job is you know, still a cop.
Charm City.
Then the second setting would, of course, be the school play set, mm-hmm. which would come with like ballet accessories. And the third would be this club, The Streets. And what's amazing about it is they had the foresight to have a floor with removable panels, and underneath are trampolines for double awesome dance moves.
And I know what you're thinking at home, too. You're like, a dance with trampolines? That sounds awesome. I'm going to run out and rent Step out to the streets tonight.
Let's step out to the streets. Hey, Billy, where you going? I hear the streets is pretty good.
You know, the thing about that trampoline dance is that it could have been accomplished if they just put mattresses on the floor. It's not like they
It's not an exciting dance.
It wasn't really what I was trying to get at.
And it kind of would have been cooler with mattresses, because it would have been like there would have been a homemade aspect to it. Like,
sure.
Oh, okay. They brought these old mattresses that they found to this warehouse site, and that's the club.
Like, yeah, it's like a junk band that play plays like an old washboard.
Exactly. It's like a junkyard band where the bass is just a string on a broomstick attached to a bucket.
What you don't realize is that they actually built the club on an abandoned trampoline. And so they discovered they were tearing up the floor. They're like, oh man, there's a trampoline under here. We should just leave it.
Ancient Indian moonwalk bounce graveyard.
An ancient Indian trampoline.
Those trampolines are actually dream catchers.
Dream bouncers.
Yep, dream
I don't
bouncers.
Like this dream. Send it away. Boing.
And then they use hip hop music to take the dream up into the stars where the angels create them.
Now the plot itself of this movie is pretty pro forma. I think what it comes down to is the dancing. That's why you watch this thing. A lot of or classic musicals, your Stair Rogers, your Gene Kelly, like the reason you go see them is the dancing in a lot of ways more than the movie. Like if the movie around the dancing is good, it's kind of a bonus.
It's like a martial arts film.
Exactly, or a martial arts film. You go for the fighting.
Or a Marx Brothers movie where you don't care about the romantic leads.
Well, I would say that's a little different.
What? You're going there for the Marx Brothers, and then there are all these scenes of...
But in theory, that movie is mostly Marx Brothers.
In theory.
Like, the romantic leads are, in addition, they're not...
Yeah, I think what we're talking about is this movie is like a martial arts movie, and that every scene, you can imagine the screenwriter's like, okay, how can I get everybody to start dancing?
Mm-hmm.
Or
exactly,
I know,
like the dancing
I know,
is
a dance
like
challenge.
The dancing is the chocolate inside of the candy shell, but the candy shell here doesn't matter. You know,
it's what I'm guessing the High School Musical movies are like, but I haven't watched those yet.
High School Musical movies are actually much more like a classic musical. I saw the first one because I was like Sarah, my wife, and I were curious. We're like, huh, sure. What is this High School Musical that's sweeping the nation? And tweens, I don't get it.
All you tween listeners to the Flophouse, write in and explain High School Musical.
Sure, if there are any.
And also explain...
Write in and make us feel weird about having tween listeners.
Why in Hannah Montana is Miley Cyrus the alter ego of Hannah Montana, rock and roll superstar, but her dad is Billy Ray Cyrus, country music superstar? Why does she have to hide her identity?
Yep. And Twilight.
What's the deal?
Yeah, why are... Are they of age?
They are not. They're high school students.
They're high school students, so they are not legal.
Last time I checked, vampires. It was better when they had sex with people.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you that.
Yeah.
Enough said.
But I think what
can you imagine the movie
Excelsior?
Can you imagine the movie The Hunger with no sex in it? I can't.
Or what's the bullpen. Vampire? Embrace of the Vampire.
Or Embrace of the Vampire. Yeah, Embrace with Alyssa Milano.
Yeah.
You're saying?
And Jennifer Tilly.
For a second, I thought you meant Shadow of the Vampire.
There's a lot of sex in it.
There's no sex in it.
just
it's implied.
Oh, I got to see that. That's a movie I haven't seen in a long time. I should see.
That's pretty good.
But
anyway,
I think that what you're trying
to
get at
dance.
Was that the dancing in this was not that exciting.
It is very subpar, like my golfing should be if I practiced more.
Now, one might think through Elliot's name checking of Gene Kelly and Astaire and Rogers that he is
Ruby Keeler.
He is simply an old before his time. Crank.
And you'd be Funny right. You'd be 80% right.
But as someone who, with his wife, watches and unironically enjoys So You Think You Can Dance, only partly because it has a lot of hot women and tights, this is not good dancing. You could see better dancing on any episode of the aforementioned show than you
or
would in
Wire.
Movie.
Or America's Next.
On any episode of The Wire, you would see better dancing than on this show.
McNulty popping and locking all over the place.
Crumping. That's a type of dancing, I think.
Here's the problem with a lot of the dancing in Jump Up to the Streets second edition is it's like it
you actually got the title wrong there.
Oh wow, did I?
Don't worry about it. Just keep going. Don't break the moment.
Oh crap, this is now everyone knows I'm not
just
a professional.
Keep it going.
Okay, no one will notice. The dancing is not it's like almost not enjoyable to watch. It's not very fluid. And that might be just this style of dancing.
Workmanlike.
Yeah, workmanlike, or it seems like you're watching stop motion animation not a lot of care was put into.
No, I mean it is that style of dancing.
The style of dancing. The purpose of it is to show that you can show how much control you have over each individual part of your body, as opposed to like
that can be
losing
actually
yourself.
Amazing,
in the...
but like they don't really give it time to like be like, oh man, my breath is being taken away. But what the human body can do?
Yeah.
I actually cannot apply any kind of judgment to the quality of the dancing, other than it was awesome.
The other thing, of course, about this dancing, the reason that she gets kicked out of her dance crew is because she keeps missing rehearsals and things like that. And after a certain point, you're like, wow, these young kids are putting a lot of work into their dancing.
Yeah, really organized.
Like, it's really organized and really strict, and it doesn't seem like fun. It just it's like a movie about like a young kid where like sports is the only way he's going to get out of the inner city, so every day he's out there playing even when he doesn't want to. Like, that's how it feels about dance.
Right, but it doesn't seem to be building towards any goal.
No. They're not trying to get work as dancers, you know, or...
Well, and, it's not... And like her and her stepmom or whatever's like, I'm going to send you to Texas. It's not like... She's been, like, sitting around in her sweatpants, like, smoking weed or something.
No, she's been practicing dancing day and night.
She dances all the time. Like, it's...
A dance is going to get you into trouble someday.
Exactly. That's
it's a gateway drug to other movements.
She's going
to
dance her way into the prison or something.
But it feels like...
Once you dance your way into prison, the guards close the door.
There's one scene...
Can't get back out.
There's one scene where... One of the music school kids is beaten up by the old dance crew, and if it wasn't for that scene, you'd think this movie took place in a universe where violence was entirely through dance. Mm-hmm. Like, people only fought and killed each other in dancing, and gangs were all dance gangs. In Baltimore, the murder capital of America. But it seems like
even them beating him up felt a little bit like they were dancing. Like, there was a little too much like hopping around
they snuck
punched.
A little dancing into that.
Well, but also without the beating up scene, you'd be kind of like, huh, this is a strange formula for a movie where we're asked to cheer on the snobs from the rich art school versus the street dancers.
Yeah, the message was very much that art school students are oppressed as opposed to minorities who, I guess, their only outlet is dance.
Right. Know? I mean, the only way that they made that...
Or selling heroin on the street.
The only way they made that
I don't know
work...
I that's really an outlet, but, you know.
Is to have, like, the leader of the dance crew just be a total dick. Like, he's like, what? You've been going to the Maryland School of the Arts behind our back. You're out of the crew. And then he's just a jerk every time he shows up in the movie since then.
It's amazing how uncongratulatory her friends were about her getting into a prestigious academy and maybe making a career out of her, you know, her one talent.
Well, you know, they're big.
Because it wasn't acting. Oh, and so forth. Other comedy sound effects.
Et cetera.
Hey, what was that movie with Eminem in it?
Where, 8 Mile?
Yeah, that's what this movie was a lot like.
It was a dance
except
version.
Except for 8 Mile was directed by Curtis Hanson, so it was a lot better than it had any right to
director
be.
Of Payback.
He didn't direct Payback.
Somebody else directed Payback.
Who directed Payback?
Oh, jeez.
I don't remember his name, but I just watched the director's cut.
Brian Hegland, I think.
Oh, Brian Hegland, that's
totally
what I'm thinking
right.
of.
I watched the director's cut of that, and it was really crappy. So burn on you, Brian Hegland. Mel Gibson made a better movie.
Yeah. Writer of L.A. Confidential.
Oh, that's why I got him mixed up, because of the L.A. Confidential.
Yeah, right.
But 8 Mile is like a rap version of this.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, right?
And just like they're always working on their dance moves on the subway. He's always working on his rhymes on the bus. What?
Just like Heat?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh, okay.
I said just like there, always.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
I don't know how Heat... It is a lot like Heat, though.
I was maybe
because the scene where the two teams finally meet up is just like when Al Pacino and Robert De Niro finally sit down together.
Yeah, and then there's that big automatic weapon bank robbery in the middle of this movie.
That was surprising.
Yeah. Most entertaining part of it, though.
Mm-hmm. And it was like 30 minutes long or something? 40 minutes? Exciting. Oh. Electric. So yeah, there weren't nearly enough montages in this movie. I was expecting.
I think there were only about three.
I was really disappointed that there wasn't when the rival, the actual inner city dance crew shows up and as payback for there's payback again weird as payback for the art school students like burn on them by like putting an old fish in that one guy's apartment. They try to get back at the art school students by just like fucking up their dance studio.
Yeah, they spray paint everywhere and knock things
break
over.
It. I was really really hoping there was going to be a montage,
up montage.
Yeah, because they had like because their teachers like, I expect you guys all to clean this up.
Yeah,
like that's weird.
And that's when everyone from the neighborhood should pitch in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like in Sister Act.
Yeah, or that when the main character's one inner city friend who doesn't really go to the school, but she seems to hang out with him a lot. Like,
I think she's auditing classes there.
Yeah, she should be there too and helping.
Yeah, she is part of the problem.
Now, Stuart mentioned some dead fish a moment ago. This bears circling back and explaining.
Okay.
After they get served,
I thought I did a pretty good job actually.
After you didn't explain it at all actually. After
the rich kids get served,
good guys get served. They learn that the only way to say challenge these guys to another dance to get their rep back is to prank them
on video.
On video, and by putting it on the internet, where it will, of course, immediately get back to
spread like wildfire.
Yeah. I think his name was Tuck.
The biggest viral videos are the dance viral videos.
It's the ones I always look at on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they immediately, it appeared to get back to them within like the afternoon once they posted it.
Well, it was probably like on the dance message board.
Yeah. But what happened
is the video clip was right next to the one where the monkey pees in its own mouth. And, you know, shit like that.
The hamster eating popcorn on the piano.
Sneezing panda. But
and it was called OMG, check out this prank dance. Prank was spelled PRNK.
And the prank was done by putting on odd costumes and dancing behind the guy.
While he obliviously went about his business.
Yeah, and then they broke into his house and just put a couple fish in
I think just one fish.
In the air duct.
Couple, I think, that's hyperbole, dude.
Yeah.
There were two of them.
I think there was just one. Yeah.
Maybe your glasses were on.
Maybe they double edited it.
You might be confused by the fact that fish is both singular and plural.
Yeah. That's it. I was reading the movie, the problem.
They also danced a bunch in this guy's apartment. Yeah. It's one of those Baltimore row houses.
They really seemed comfortable in the space.
But, yeah, they must have really planned this one out.
Yeah.
As soon as the guy saw the video, he angrily overturned his computer, smashing it, and then went over to the air duct to confirm that there were, in fact, fish in it. He didn't smell the fish at that point.
No, when he walks into his apartment, he says, this place smells terrible.
I believe he says it smells like Funyuns and something like armpits.
That. Or fungus, something like that.
I think he said Funyuns. I'm going to imagine he said Funyuns.
In my opinion, the real hero of this movie...
You're going to lose us our Funyun sponsorship.
I love Funyuns.
The real hero of this movie is the director of the academy, who seems to be about 30 years old, and yet is the director of an arts academy and a dance professor. Maybe just the director of the dance program. And his family, I guess, founded the school.
Sure.
But just the fact that he fought his way to that position at such a young age, I find really impressive. Even if he is the stern, you know, ultra white.
And he's like the brother of our romantic lead.
Yeah, right? And it's so lonely at that point. He has nobody in his life.
Exactly. He spends all his time at the school. He's devoted to it. His whole life. And he's going to die alone, and they're going to just put a bust of him up in the hallway or something.
He has some sort of indeterminate European accent.
I think it's just Snoot.
But his brother doesn't have it.
Yeah, because his brother is of the people.
I see.
They're separated at birth, I guess.
Oh. Sure. It's like Double Impact.
Yeah. Well, Double Impact is basically the Van Damme Prince and the Pauper. So, yeah. I think that just told us a lot about both of you right there, what your minds went to right away.
So, yes. Double Impact, the dance version, features the one brother who's of the people of the streets, and then the other brother who's kind of snooty. He would be the FBI agent character.
He'd
be Ray Tango. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for vocalizing that for me.
I knew it's what you were thinking almost immediately. So he would be Sylvester Stallone in Tango
so
and
transparent.
Cash.
Yeah. And he's got nothing. Like you mentioned, a bust of him. Like if he does die, if he dies going to a street dancing competition, gets stabbed.
There's
going to
be a portrait of him in the hallway.
It'll be like the bust of John Voight's character in the Bratz film.
Well, that was a symbol of his own vanity. That was unearned. Completely unearned. Yeah, and smashed.
Maybe I'm wrong, then.
That's why it was so easy to smash, because they were trying to tell us that all vanity is hollow.
Yeah.
And to live is to live for others and not for oneself.
That was the motto
of the Bratz movie.
I shouldn't have brought up the Bratz movie. It's derailing everything.
I was trying to explain to somebody recently why the Bratz movie is on the top of our scale, and I couldn't quite get it across in a way that they understood. But there are two things I wanted to bring up. One was our main character heroine. She rallies the other people at the Streets Warehouse to her side with an inspiring speech.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
About how dance is about bringing together all of what you got and coming together with other people, which seems the exact opposite. The point of dance in the movie seemed to be to show off and make other people impressed at your talents.
And I know that it's a movie cliche, so I shouldn't harp on it too much, but she does manage to turn the audience from jeering loudly at her to applauding for her
and following her into the rain. And following her into the rain outside to watch her dance.
Yeah, she says that
for an excuse, frankly.
She says,
it's really hot in there. They just
oh,
cool
if
off.
They're not going to let us dance in here, we're going to go outside and dance in the rain. But by that time, she's won over the entire crowd, so they really could have stayed inside, you know?
Yeah.
I think that was really calculated.
Mm.
A puppet master rests.
Yeah.
A puppet
I knew
mistress?
That wet shirts could only help their cause.
Yep. Wet half shirts.
Yeah, yeah she
and
never wore a full
shirt.
The answer
is yes, it did, actually.
There was, it was the shirts she was wearing, to a certain extent, would shrink. It was like the top and the bottom were going in and trying to meet each other in the middle.
Yeah, it's almost like a set of eyebrows. Yes. Like the more serious she is, the smaller that top is, that tube top.
A lot of cleavage and a lot of belly.
Yeah, and by cleavage, I mean she's a dancer, so
no, she had a fair amount of.
I think a lot of that was CGI or something.
Well, all right, let's not linger on our leading
but the,
ladies.
The other thing was there's
but
this
that's the movie poster, dude. I'm not like.
The movie poster is just a close up of her cleavage.
Yeah, covered in water.
It's called National Lampoon Step Up to the Streets.
And the other thing was, there's one like looking back on it, the one scene that seemed like it could have been in a much better movie was they go to the girl who's her friend who's in the old dance crew and comes and helps them out is Hispanic. And they go to her family's house for a barbecue, and it's just them kind of interacting. There's very little dialogue, but there's them just interacting with her family in the backyard of this barbecue. And it like that was like the one scene where I was like, I'd like to see an actual version of this scene that isn't just dancing, where it's, you know, them meeting people from
– little fish out of water elements.
Exactly. But also like, you know, maybe they're wary of each other at first. The snooty kids have never eaten spicy food, maybe, and then you know, the mom
like
dances
pernil.
With this other kid.
Spice,
the pork dish,
spice so ethnic.
The well,
yeah, this isn't bland. What are you serving?
Dane, you brought this up while we were watching the movie, but I think what's funny about, and I think a little bit telling about this movie is that the most sympathetic character and the character that like I like the most clearly is the ex-girlfriend of the romantic lead. The ex-girlfriend
who's set up to be a bitch at first.
Yeah, who's set up to be a bitch, but nothing she does in the entire movie is anything other than like totally normal and like understandable.
If she wasn't supposed to be the bitch because she's the ex-girlfriend, she would come across as the outsider girl who's trying to be supportive and make new friends.
Yeah,
and like tags along and ultimately gets it, you know, into the group. You know,
the nice girl who's pretty that you know isn't very good in social situations, but you know she's up for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and she ends up making out with the dork. First of all, she ends up making out with the dork before the two romantic like leads end up kissing, which I think is interesting as well. Like normally they do like, you know, your hero and heroine kiss and then they're like, "Hey, let's get a laugh from the dork and some other chick like the dork and the hot girl."
Well, I assume the hero and heroine were always supposed to kiss as the final beat in the movie.
Okay.
Like the screenwriter laid out his three-act outline and he's like, "Act 1, we got to see them dancing on a subway car. And somewhere in the middle of Act 2, she gets kicked out of school. And then in Act 3 at the end, they kiss. And I'll just fill in the rest, man."
With
and that's
dance.
What he did. With dance. I want to see the script because I imagine it just says, insert dance scene. Or like they
it's
dance their differences.
So for Step Up 3, that girl in the dork.
Step Up 3, the streets.
I would think it'd be something else. Like
Step Up 3, the avenues.
It doesn't scan. There's no pun there.
No.
Step Up 3 to be you and me.
Okay. Sure.
Step Up 3, the secret of the ooze.
Step Up 3,
that
men
was
and the, a baby.
That was TMNT 2 also. That wasn't even 3 was Turtles in Time.
<My mistake.
Notice how easy it came to me that I said TMNT instead of saying
weird.
The full title out loud.
Uncomfortable.
You're like, oh, those movies ruined Eastman and Laird's original vision.
Well, it had already been bastardized by the cartoon and the Archie comic, you know.
Sure.
Their vision of getting rich quickly off of characters they created.
It's a noble goal. So let's just go ahead and give this movie our final judgment and move on.
Yeah, what is
final judgment?
My current affair sound effect. I'm
working on that. I think it's improved over the vacation.
Thanks. So what are our categories again?
Is this a movie that is a bad, bad movie? There's no merit. A good bad movie, you enjoy it because it's humorously bad, or a movie that you like in some way. Stuart, I'm going to turn to you.
Yeah, this is a bad, bad movie. There's really nothing very exciting about it. The dancing was subpar. Yeah, it wasn't that great.
Yeah, I was on the verge of giving it a good bad just because it sort of moves along at a good clip.
That's true.
Like your dance movies do. I mean, even though the dancing isn't good, there's a lot more energy in it. So it sort of, I don't know, it makes the cliched elements more enjoyable. But a really good bad dance film is Breakin' 2.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's no Breakin' 2.
That's the gold standard.
When they bring a man back to life in the hospital through dance.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Breakin' 2 and only know it through thousands of Electric Boogaloo jokes, you know.
You do yourself a favor and see it.
Go out and rent that. So that's my recommendation.
Is that a Golan Globus film?
A what?
Is that from the Golan Globus company?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, if it is, it's the best movie they ever made, except for Gymkhana. And yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you guys. It's I kind of want to give it a better grade because it means well and it didn't take up too much of our time, but it is a bad. There are better versions of it, so I have to say it's a bad, bad movie.
There wasn't anything that is going to live past this moment of us talking about it.
I will not remember it. On the other hand,
when historians write the story
of the Flophouse, when we do the oral history of the Flophouse,
we have not been able to find any record of this movie.
When
existing.
James Lipton mentions this
perhaps
episode
they made
to
it
us,
up.
We won't.
When far in the post-apocalyptic future, where scalds sit around the fire singing tales of the Flophouse to the younglings.
Wait, skulls sit around
scalds.
The scalds, like the
scalds.
The northern. The,
I was
the
imagining
Norse, when animated robot skulls sit around
for
the
some
fire
reason, in the future, we'll
the
all
trash
see
can
skulls.
Fire.
Yep. When the movie The Skulls sits around a fire and Joshua Jackson tells stories of the Flophouse.
And Craig T. Nelson shows up to be a bad guy again.
Oh, what a career Craig T. Nelson's had, from Action Jackson to Flesh Gordon to Coach to The Skulls.
To Turner and Hooch.
To Turner and Hooch, yeah. And to the Pixar films.
Yeah. Talented.
So but before we get on to our recommendations.
Started as a voice actor, ended as a voice actor.
Well, our special this episode recommendations segment.
Our New Year's recommendations.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
I have some emails and that
letters.
I'd like to read.
We get letters. We get lots and lots of letters.
All complaints
now
again?
You're gonna get sued by Paul Schaefer.
No.
Again.
jerk. The first one actually is completely just waxing our own car. This is from Alex, last name withheld.
It says, wait, is he related
we're
to
we're helping to we're helping to keep it safe from water damage.
It says, just wanted to say thanks for all your work on the podcast. I absolutely love the show and look forward to every episode. A Ziggy Link brought me in. A Ziggy Link.
which Ziggy Link, huh? Like, we've done so many Ziggy things. We've been typecast already as the Ziggy Podcast.
Yeah.
I'm getting so angry at someone who wrote a nice letter to us.
I think you're more mad at Dan.
Zcast. And I've never left. I'll try to keep spreading the word, voting on Podcast Alley, etc. Thanks again, and please keep it up. The show is really the best hour of comedy out there, not including The View. Those bitches.
Nice.
What do we have to do to take them down?
So is there a...
We need a sassy black lady.
Is there is there like a Ziggy fan page or something?
I hope so. And I want to find it.
From?
We got a.
Well, we were a brief Zigstation.
Yeah, Elliot was a Zigstation.
Well, but
wait, what?
He took the world by Zigstorm.
Zigstorm.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't remember this. Let's move on.
Well, I want to say they mentioned all the work you do. I want to briefly make sure the audience knows that Dan does basically all of the work.
That's true.
When it comes to making this, he owns the recording equipment. He picks. He gets the movies for us to watch, and he edits this and uploads it.
And sometimes he throws away my empty beer cans.
That you leave. And Stuart just brings kind of like his wit, and I bring kind of the spark and the publicity value that brings people to us through Ziggy Links. But
I think wit is what I bring.
And his mustache.
Sure.
He also has a inexplicable charm that the ladies like.
I think inexplicable is the best thing.
Cannot be explicated.
All of the female fan mail seems to center around Stuart. So.
What about that girl who likes Elliot? Oh, wait, that wasn't related.
No,
to this,
that was because
we'll talk about that later.
We won't talk about that here. We will not. that was completely unrelated.
Thanks,
to this.
Lorax.
I am the Lorax. I keep my secrets from the public.
So from Matt, last name withheld. Hey, did you guys ever think about doing a live show where you comment on a movie MST3K style? I'd see it. So that's one audience member we'd have. Maybe he can rent us a theater.
Sure. If he wants to produce that show, then and publicize it.
And pay any you know, copyright.
Well, all we have to do is say we have to do what Eric used did and call it a class instead of a show, and then people pay tuition, and then it's okay.
Really, was that the reason why that happened?
We should. I think that's why he called it that. We shouldn't be talking about this on the air,
but that's why he called it that. I think what actually happened was it was so small scale that it was not worth the trouble.
Yeah, we are referring to a show that a friend of ours used to produce.
That was fun.
Was along the same lines, a live theater show. But no one came to that, so I doubt you'll see a live Flophouse anytime
soon.
Probably
not.
Well, but it would be. But thanks for the suggestion. Got to be positive.
Jameson, last name withheld, said I had to go to Germany for work, and they had the same in-flight movies on my departing and returning flights. That's the story of why I watched Meet Dave, starring Eddie Murphy.
Ouch!
It would be perfect for review on some future episode of the Flophouse. I swear, 75% of the film is shot on a set that looks like a bad mouthwash / toothpaste ad. This movie is a real gem and a mind blower.
We might have to do that one then.
It's an Eddie Murphy movie, though.
I don't know. I think I'm going to put that on my list.
Well, we managed to skip Norbit, so we may have do Meet Dave.
Okay.
I'm putting it on my list with 7 Pounds and Underworld Rise of the Lycans okay. on our must-do list.
I don't want
to
think about that.
And the Spirit when it comes to nudity.
Oh, and the Spirit, certainly.
So this is actually from my sister-in-law and sort of my brother, Marina and John, last name withheld.
I think you can probably guess the last name. The way you said that, it was as if she was your sister-in-law and kind of your brother, the same person.
she wrote the email. I don't know that my brother actually had any hand in the writing of the email. But it says, Dear Floppers, you asked for a gift for the holidays, and since your gift to us is free, so is ours to you. Now, she's going to make a correction in this email, but then she makes an error shortly thereafter. So let's see if you can pick up on the error that she makes.
And you at home, you'll play this game too.
Elliot mentioned in last week's podcast that Hans Conried was a star in Casablanca. Of course, I imagine that Elliot meant Paul Henried.
Ah, that is what I meant. And I got
Hans
Conrad Veidt is also in that film. That's why I got it mixed up.
Idiot.
However, it got us thinking that Hans Conried, perhaps best known for playing Captain Hook's voice in Disney's Peter Pan and narrating the Grinch movie, might have been an excellent choice in the film as Laszlo or even Rick. And here she does a little playlet that I won't read because it would require me to do the voice of Hans Conried, which I don't know if I can do. But that's her little correction. Now, did you get the error that she made?
I totally didn't.
Yes,
but I wasn't paying attention.
That's right.
I was busy flagellating myself for getting the names mixed up.
That's right. Boris Karloff was the narrator for How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Now, it's possible she was talking about Halloween is Grinch Night, which was narrated by
Hans Conried. She mentioned the
Grinch in
that letter?
Conried.
Let me read that email.
She says the Grinch movie. Now, she may be referring to the Ron Howard movie, but
I don't
believe that had a narrator, and I don't believe it was Hans Conried.
Maybe.
So,
was Jim Carrey in that?
So, thanks for the correction. However, we can turn it right back on you and say that you were thinking of Boris Karloff.
That's true, and he won a Grammy for that.
Yeah. So,
and I apologize to everybody. I've been getting a lot of names wrong.
Yeah.
This one I got too. I need more sleep.
You gotta pull it together, dude.
This turns into a floppervention.
You're making us look like shit. Okay.
Sorry. Well, thank you for knowing the difference between Hans Conried and Paul Henried.
Yeah.
But so, Conrad Veidt is in that movie.
Let's just move on.
Yeah.
Let's gloss over Elliot's shame.
Wow.
His glaring shortcomings.
Sure.
We're going to do, instead of our usual recommendations, because it is a new year, we're going to talk about our five favorite movies we saw that came out in the past year. And before we get into it, I just want to give the caveat that we're not professional critics, and no. So we have not seen by any stretch all of the major films that were released this year.
Let alone the minor films.
So, yeah. These lists are basically worthless.
Yeah.
They're worth what we put into them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not a lot.
They're a picture into our worlds.
Yeah.
Exactly. A window,
so,
if you will.
Of the films that we
sad
did
or
see,
great, as they might be.
These are the ones we liked. Does anyone want to step up to the streets and be the first
well,
to...
Well, what a segue. And no.
Conveniently, after this movie, I had to amend my list.
Yeah.
To add Step Up to the Streets at it.
Yeah, that's
at number
true.
One.
Wait, I'll go... Okay, I'll go first. You guys are looking at me. Yeah, as Dan said, I have not actually seen that many movies. So if there's something that I forget, you don't slap your forehead and go, oh, God, he forgot that, because I probably just haven't seen it. These are in no particular order. So I put WALL-E on there because it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I have to explain why WALL-E is really good. I put The Dark Knight on there. Dark Knight is really good. Once again,
well thought out.
Descriptive.
I mean, I don't. It's one of those things where right. I thought it was kind of a no brainer. I didn't really have to go into.
Sure, it was the most popular film of the year and the second highest grossing film ever.
Now I'm getting
what's
into
the first highest grossing Spider-Man 3.
Still Titanic.
Really?
Highest grossing. Yeah.
It's a disappointment.
That's disappointing. I want it to change every year.
Yeah. So maybe we should do something about that.
Let's go see Dark Knight a million times.
Well, that's past that.
Oh.
Because it's a new year, right? Although it's being re-released in IMAX in January.
Well, no, I'm saying the total, the highest grossing.
Oh, okay. Let's go see overall, that shit in IMAX. So you could,
if you really
blow
wanted
our
to,
minds.
If you really wanted to roll up
IMAX
another
experience.
$12 on that, he could.
Or $12 million.
Yeah, we're going to have to see it a million times. $12 million is not going to change that record. We're going to have to see it 20 million times each.
Okay.
And that might not even do it.
Jesus.
I don't know if I have enough time to do that.
You better make time.
Okay.
Do you care about this?
Or maybe I could rent out the entire IMAX movie theater a million times.
That would be a time-saving measure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would also be fun because I could, like, run around. It'd be like a Toys R Us shopping spree.
Yeah, like when Nickelodeon used to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, guys, stop interrupting. the next couple probably need a little bit of explanation. The next one is Funny Games, the remake of the German original. I mainly put that on there because I really enjoyed it, and duh. And because I watch a lot of movies this year, like Them and The Strangers, mm-hmm. and a couple others that I thought were very similar, but Funny Games managed to accomplish like a creepiness and also a voyeurism feel that I think the others weren't really capable of. So Funny Games, great. I picked Let the Right One In, which has got a little bit of buzz nowadays. It's a great genre movie. And, you know, I just really love vampires, so I picked that one. And finally, I picked, I'll just say number one movie of the year for me was Pineapple Express. Maybe it's because I heart Seth Rogen or something, but it was it was goofy and action movie enough. Yeah, I just really liked it. So, Pineapple Express.
I still haven't
Express.
Seen it yet.
It's really good. It just came out on DVD today, and I haven't bought it yet. Oh, wait, I just dated our podcast.
Yeah, when people listen to this in 20 years, they won't be able to get over that. We've been thinking about posterity a lot in this podcast.
I know.
So, yeah, I have a top five that is basically, I would say, a three-way tie for first and then a couple other movies I like. And so the other movies I liked were...
Are you going backwards?
Yes.
You start at the bottom and work your way up.
Oh, I didn't do that. Okay.
It's okay. You can do it however you want.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I thought that was a very... It did pretty well at the box office, but it was sort of overlooked, I felt like, at the time. It sort of felt like an also-ran comedy.
I think people were kind of Apatow'd out.
Yeah. But I think it's actually one of the better ones.
There's certainly more penis in it.
Sure.
McCoy, stamp of approval.
If you got a thing for doughy, tall guys, penises.
Ease up, dude. Doughy? Like, he probably works out more than me.
I can guarantee that, but
he's a doughy guy. He's also much more successful than me, so I think he'll take that.
Okay.
Burn After Reading, again, a film that I thought people sort of just dismissed, but I really laughed at that movie a lot.
That I think will find its audience someday. Yeah. That hasn't yet.
And then the three-way tie for first, WALL-E, The Dark Knight, and Rachel Getting Married. You know, not really surprising. All films that got a fair amount of critical acclaim. You know, obviously two were blockbusters. But if you haven't seen Rachel Getting Married...
Yeah, Rachel Getting Married is, well, like the second highest grossing movie of all time now. After
That's
Titanic.
True.
Yeah.
We're going to have to rent out an IMAX theater. Get that over the top.
20 zillion IMAX theaters.
Rosemary DeWitt is now America's biggest star. But I also just wanted to, like, quickly run down, not saying anything about them, you know, a bunch of sort of... honorable mentions.
Also Rans.
And that's Teeth, In Bruges, Be Kind Rewind, The Signal, The Bank Job, Doomsday, Iron Man, Red Belt, Pineapple Express, Tropic Thunder, Slumdog Millionaire, Quantum of Solace, and Milk.
So you're just making a mockery of the entire idea of a top five list.
I didn't say anything.
No, it's just
about
a list of like movies you liked.
I'm
as well.
Running down.
I would have made a much more extensive list then.
He says the guy who has actually six in his top five.
Well,
not to spoil anything.
Watch out. Yeah, that's true. I'm gonna go from the top down.
Starting with number one.
Yeah, although these are not.
Allie has no conception of suspense.
These are not really in any particular order per se. The ones at the bottom are really more the ones that are in a specific order, so that's what I want to go.
Okay.
On.
So dropping on us.
A couple of these are movies that I've mentioned on the podcast before.
Mm-hmm.
The Fall, which I watched more times than any other movie this year and really loved it, and I've talked about it in other podcasts, so I won't go on about it again. Synecdoche, New York, which was one of the few movies I saw this year that really felt like it was a personal vision that was put on screen. And I thought there were some very funny moments in it and some very good scenes in it. And it was a movie where when I left the theater, everyone else was depressed and I felt great, which is an awesome feeling. Then WALL-E, in no particular order, because as you guys, implied, it's basically perfect. There's almost nothing you can complain about WALL-E until the end credits roll and that Peter Gabriel song starts. And then it becomes the worst movie ever made. But until that moment, and even the short that comes with it, which is called what?
I think it's my favorite.
It's fantastic, and it's such an improvement over Boundin, the short before The Incredibles, which is terrible.
Wait, I didn't watch the short.
Presto about the rabbit and the hat. It's really good.
The thing about that Peter Gabriel credits sequence is that it made me think of the Aborigine children in Beyond Thunderdome. Like the stories of them telling about Max the Wanderer.
That makes sense. But is it like Pixar seems to be the only people in Hollywood who know how to do solid story structure and characters developed through action instead of exposition and. I wish they could hold like a seminar for everyone in Hollywood.
Yeah,
to go
you would
to.
Think, right? You would. I would imagine in Hollywood, a bunch of dudes should be calling them and saying, "Hey, how do you actually make a movie?"
Yeah,
I don't know.
And Disney is like they made that thing where they're like, Pixar is always successful. It must be because kids don't want to see 2D animation no more. And it's like, no, it's because they tell the best stories in the world. Like,
Disney was also run by the Little Rascals.
it was the Bowery Boys. Hey guys, we gotta get. More like Pixar. Oh boy, some guys could live like this, number four here, I have a tie between Milk and The Dark Knight. They were both
so similar.
Well, they're both movies that were really well done and really well made and kind of embody this art, somewhat timeless, but also embody this kind of political moment in some ways. And they both have their flaws and in structure and length, but they have one amazing performance that kind of ties them together. In Milk, there's two, actually. There's Sean Penn as Harvey Milk, who matures so believably throughout the film, and Josh Brolin as
Dan White,
Dan White, which is an amazing performance. The way they handle him is so complicated and so rich when they could have very easily made him like a very cardboard, crazy guy bigot, and it's really, to the movie's credit, makes it a better movie. And The Dark Knight, of course, is Heath Ledger, who, when he died, people were like, he played the Joker and it made him crazy. And it was like, I don't think so. And then I saw his performance and I was like, yeah, that's exactly what happened. Is he played the Joker and he went crazy and took drugs to go to sleep and died. It's just such a fantastic performance and, I like it a lot. And and my fifth final one is Guy Madden's movie My Winnipeg, which came out this year and is a very small-scale movie, even for him, who makes movies in warehouses, basically. And it starts off being this kind of like, almost like a John Hodgman movie, like the form of fact but entirely made up, with tiny bits of reality tied with like these these huge jokes and like bizarre situations. And it takes a strange turn into a very personal kind of attack on the NHL, which Guy Madden seems to see as responsible in some ways, symbolically at least, for the relegation of Winnipeg to like a boondock city and kind of the end of his father's career in hockey as the manager of the local Winnipeg Maroons. And it gets very emotional from that point, and I like it a lot. So Guy Madden is accused a lot of too many levels of irony between himself and the work, and here I think you can't really accuse him of that. So those are my 5.5 favorites because I had 6 on there.
Nice.
All right. Well, we've all had a good laugh tonight, but every delightful episode of the Flophouse must sometime come to an end.
Like now.
Yeah. It abruptly cuts off.
Yeah, so, yeah, I've been Stuart Wellington.
I've been Dan McCoy.
And I will always be Elliot Kalin.
Good night, fools.
Thanks.
You know, Sigourney Weaver, Charles S. Dutton, with no hair, as he always never had.
Wait, what about when he was Alien 3?
He had no hair.
I am also talking about things.
You know, he got arrested for manslaughter.
Well, that's where he became an actor after he spent time in jail for manslaughter.
I wonder what type of person he had to slaughter.
Well, it sounded like it, from what I've read of it, it sounds like it was like a drunk fight that went wrong, and he accidentally killed some. I mean, that's why it was manslaughter; it was an accident. And that's why he, as punishment, he had to star in Mimic with Mira Sorvino.
A Guillermo del Toro movie.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not as bad as you think.
I think Guillermo del Toro had to direct it for community service for something.